Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
Good evening, I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you, is made possible by the University of Maryland Division of Transplantation, where patients' lives are enhanced by a renowned transplant program known for innovation and excellence in kidney, liver, and pancreas transplants. More information, 1-800-492-5538, or you can go to thesteinershow.org on our website, click on the University of Maryland Medical Center banner, and all the information is there as well. We are going to tackle the Middle East once again here. We've been doing it for the last 18 or so years in the show because it's one of the most important subjects, I think, facing the globe and this country. President Barack Obama delivered a speech recently about the...
Two speeches.
Thank you, Ali. One of our guests speaking. I'll introduce him to you in a minute. And
correcting you.
Correcting is fine. I can be corrected.
You can be correct.
And many people, some people in certain sectors of America and AIPAC and other organizations criticize it as an anti-Israeli speech. Many people then argued, well, Barack Obama didn't say anything new that President Bush or President Clinton didn't say, except that he added in words in a speech that you have to go back to 67 borders and exchange land. So the question is, what does this all mean and where does it go? What do we think of the responses from Israel and from the Palestinians? We'll explore what the Hamas and PLO, Palestinian Authority coming together means. And we do remember historically that Hamas is the one that won the election
the last time
they really had an election.
2006.
And so we'll cover all that and see how that fits into the world of the uprisings in the Middle East that have now spread in some viscerally and emotional way and political way to Spain.
That's right.
And so the number here is 410-319-8888. Joining Anthony and Mark Steiner are Dr. Ali Zagab, who used to be professor of English literature at Birzeit University on the West Bank in Palestine, is a local businessman who is very active in Palestinian and affairs. And Dr. Stephen David is professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University, who's also been a guest on the show many, many times. And Ali and Steve, good to have you both with us.
Thank you.
Nice to be here.
One day I'm going to get you in the studio, Stephen. You keep hiding in the office. We need you in the studio one day.
I'm a wandering Jew.
So am I. But what, I'm here. So anyway,
you should join your wandering Palestinian friend and come here then.
So let's get an analysis from both of you. Starting with Ali Zagab and then Stephen David. What's your analysis of the president's speech? And what does it portend, and what is its importance, if anything? Ali? Who did I say first?
Ali,
and then Steve. Thank you.
I do believe, you know, the president gave two speeches. The one, which was, well, I think, almost last week, and yesterday or the day before at AIPAC, the American Jewish lobby community. I think although a lot of people see different things in the speeches, but I do believe they are one and the same. President Obama's job is to assure the Israelis of their security and safety, which is a very important and a crucial issue in the Middle East. And he also has to assure the Palestinians that there will be a state called Palestine in the pre-June 5, 1967 borders, with adjustments agreed to by both parties. The 67, as he said, borders... These things have been said in private many, many times. Bush Senior, Clinton, Bush Junior, and President Obama right now. The Palestinians agree and the Israelis agree that there will have to be adjustments agreed to by both parties. The speech at AIPAC, I think it was a great speech also, because you need to assure the Jewish community here and everywhere that you are not anti-Israel, you are not anti the Jewish people. And, you know, he confirmed that Israel should be a Jewish state for the Jewish people and for the residents of Israel. That a lot of Palestinians, not a lot, but some Palestinians, especially the radical ones, did not like that designation. But it is a Jewish state, and we all have to agree to that. We have to acknowledge that. And President Obama made it extremely clear in his speech in front of AIPAC.
Stephen David.
Well, I agree with a lot of what Ali said. I mean, in some respects, there wasn't all that much new in what Obama said, except for the fact that he said it. Now, I think when you look at the 67 borders, I mean, two things are clear that I think all reasonable people agree with. One is that Israel is not going to go back exactly to the 1967 borders. The large settlement blocks, Maale Adonim and others, are clearly going to be incorporated into Israel. And I think the Palestinians acknowledge this, too. So you're not going to go totally back to the pre-67. At the same time, as Obama said, the 67 borders are a basis for moving forward. They're where the peace talks begin. I think what caused a lot of concern was, first of all, there's a lot of suspicion of Obama in the pro-Israeli community, which I should emphasize is not simply the Jewish community or not exclusively the Jewish community. There are probably many more Christian Zionists than there are Jewish Zionists in America. But also the fact that the president publicly stated that the 67 borders would be the basis for a settlement, even though this was the policy of prior presidents, including George Bush and Bill Clinton. No president had publicly come out and said this is what is going to happen. And so when you're already dealing with a skittish population, any nuance, any change is enough to make people very agitated.
Let me add, if you don't mind, some of the Jewish settlements, whether Israel, Maale Adumim, or others, will have to remain Jewish. I think we all agree. And also the Palestinians need a passage between the West Bank and Gaza. And I do remember meeting a senior Israeli official. She was acting prime minister at that point, in fact. And she mentioned that for the Palestinians to connect the West Bank and Gaza, they need land. That land is Israel land right now. And that is, I think, where the exchange will fit in. You get a passage between Gaza and the West Bank, and maybe you expand your access to the Mediterranean. And, you know, the Israelis keep the major concentration of Israeli settlers in the West Bank.
I'll practice response to that quickly. My sense is that the Israelis are not going to give a swath of land connecting the West Bank and Gaza, because that would split Israel in two. I mean, one can envision some creative solutions, an overpass, a tunnel, a right-of-way, but it's hard for me to imagine a Palestinian state connected through the lower center of Israel being allowed to exist. But I think those things could be worked out.
But clearly, if were you about to say something, Anthony?
I was just going to ask, because I know your question will be much better than mine.
Please.
But let's start with Stephen and then Ali. Put this in context for us, because as soon as President Obama, Dr. David, gave his speech last week, I was on Facebook and was really surprised at the offense and anger by some of the Jewish leaders that I was engaging on Facebook. They were outraged by his mentioning of these 1967 borders. And then when he spoke on Sunday, these same folks, some of them who are extreme in their beliefs, said, okay, I think he explained better. I was confused, because when I listened and I watched the whole speech, I really thought he was trying to give us the context for where he thought a good conversation could begin and dialogue could begin. But there was a lot of anger from the community about his speaking those borders out loud.
No, I think that's true. And there's unquestionably a lot of anger. And again, I think a lot of it stems from the fact that a lot of very strong supporters of Israel are very suspicious of Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also suspicious of the notion of an imposed settlement, where the United States would lay out the parameters of a settlement and say, this is where we, America, feel it should go. In fact, my understanding is many of Obama's advisors wanted to do just that, and wanted not only to talk about the 67 borders, but about the sensitive issues of Jerusalem and the right of return. And in the end, he pulled back. The anger you heard on the 67 border issue, my guess is, would be nothing compared to the anger that many would express if Jerusalem and the right of return of the Palestinians was also put forth as American proposals. But I think there's a lot of frustration in this country that this conflict has lingered on for such a long time. It engages and saps American interests. And there's a sense that, left to their own devices, the Israelis and the Palestinians are not going to come to a settlement on their own. And they need someone or something like the United States to prod them forward. And I'm reluctantly sympathetic to that point of view.
And I think that is why President Obama should be highly commended, because he laid it out, whatever has been said in private, in meetings, private meetings between Arab diplomats and Arab kings and presidents and the American administration for the past 40-some years, he had the courage to come out and say it in public. And again, he said, this is the basic premise, and from that basic premise, we have many options. He did not mention the right of return. I don't think that he ever will mention the right of return. I personally, I'm a Palestinian. I was born in Palestine. I'm an American citizen of Palestinian origin right now. And I really do not think that the right of return will ever work. It just does not work. With all due respect to my Arab brothers and sisters, it just does not work. It will not work. It should not work. And I think the financial compensation is the only thing that we have to worry about for the majority of the Palestinian refugees. And most of us really are at that point. Most of the Palestinians are at that point as we speak.
Folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. You just heard Dr. Aliza Gubb. We're also joined by Dr. Stephen David. Anthony McCarthy is here in the studio with us on his Monday. And we'll talk about his Mondays in a minute.
That's right.
At the end of the show, 410-319-8888 is the number here as we look at Israel-Palestine, the president's speech in the Middle East. Let me ask some questions here. Let me just take a little push from the outside to both of you. Why is it for Israel to determine what happens to the Palestinians and to the West Bank and Gaza, to Palestine? I mean, that in some ways, some people argue, is how it's being set up. Mm-hmm. It's what Israel wants that has to have sway, not what the Palestinians want when it comes to Jerusalem, how to deal with the right of return, the refugees who are in Lebanon and all the other countries that they're in, to what land gets there and up, and no settlements don't have to go. They can stay. 20% of the West Bank is now an Israeli Jewish population. There are a lot of things here that people just don't want to talk about in public. They don't want to talk about it in polite company. To wrestle and deal with these things. I mean, we've had over the years, Ali, on this program, some very vociferous discussions about these issues. Stephen, please jump in. But
I think the basic answer is that Israel is in control of those lands that are in dispute. I mean, the European Union can say, or the Arab League can say, hey, give up the West Bank. And nothing happens. It's only when Israel makes the decision to withdraw its troops, withdraw its settlements, that things happen. I mean, the Israelis left Gaza as a result of an Israeli decision of Ariel Sharon. The international community can talk all it wants, but it's Israeli troops, Israeli forces, and the Israeli government that controls these territories, and it's their decision that's going to determine what happens to them.
I really don't think it's their decision only, by the way. If it was their decision, the whole issue of Palestine would not be on the table. And with you remember Golda Meir, when she was asked about the Palestinians, she said, oh, who? They never existed, they never will. So I don't think it's up to theirs. You have the whole international community now, not just even the European Union or the United States. The whole international community has changed so much in the past even 10 years. In the past, you had Abba Eban as the foreign minister of Israel, one of the most erudite, the most fascinating people you could ever meet. Now they have this bouncer known as Lieberman. He literally was a bouncer in the Ukraine. And the way he talks is completely different from Abba Eban, you know, who generated sympathy for the Israeli people and the Jewish state when it was young. I think the table is turned now, and more sympathy in Europe and the world is generated towards the Palestinian cause in establishing a secure and Palestinian state next to a secure Israel.
Okay, I agree, Ali, with what you're saying. I think ever since the 67 war, the tide of public and world opinion has turned against Israel. But I think a mistake of the Palestinian movement and maybe the broader Arab movement is to get all of these diplomatic victories, whether they be in the UN or the EU or elsewhere, and not focusing enough on the people who I think will really make a difference, and that's the Israeli citizenry. I mean, most public opinion polls in Israel suggest that most Israeli citizens are prepared for a two-state solution, with Palestine existing side by side with Israel, similar to what was offered at Camp David. But years of terrorism, rocket attacks from Gaza, and incendiary rhetoric has made the Israelis very skittish about making the kinds of concessions that are necessary. So, you know, the Palestinians can get all of these diplomatic victories, and they'll probably have another one in September in the UN. But where has it gotten them? I mean, they really, the address is Israel. And I think they'll find, for the most part, a receptive audience. Now obviously, there are some Israelis who are not going to give up anything, for whom any kind of concession or nonviolent movement is going to make no difference. But I truly think that's a minority. I think if the Palestinians adopted a policy more of reassurance and a sense that if a state were created, it would not lob thousands of rockets into Israel, they'd get a lot further than this policy of violence and terrorism.
But don't you think that Prime Minister Fayyad and Mahmoud Abbas, and I have a lot of respect for Prime Minister Fayyad, don't you think that for the past at least 5 or 6 years, he's done a magnificent job in building a Palestine with infrastructure and this and that, without and major cooperation between the Israeli and the Palestinian security forces in the West Bank under the leadership of Prime Minister Fayyad? I think that is enough incentive for the Israelis to see that there is someone on the other side who is willing to have peace with us, who is willing to even coordinate security issues with us. However, the Israelis failed to do anything to reciprocate, to keep him even in power, and to show the Palestinian, the average Palestinian person, that by doing this, he got something in return. I think we have been unfortunate with the murder of Yitzhak Rabin and with the almost the sad case of Prime Minister Sharon. I think had either of these people survived, I do believe we would have been able to...
Okay, but Bali, I mean, I agree with some of what you say. I think Abbas and Fayyad have done a tremendous amount in the West Bank. But, you know, in 2008, the Israelis had a Prime Minister, Ehud Olmert, who offered Abbas what is reportedly a very good deal. I mean, virtually the entirety of the West Bank, Gaza, a divided Jerusalem, and Abbas did nothing with it. And this is a part of a long succession of offers to the Palestinians. You know, you mentioned Abba Ebin. He famously said, the Palestinians have never missed an opportunity to miss an opportunity. And I think there's some truth to that. There have been a number of offers going back to the original partition plan in 47 and 48, and Camp David and the Olmert offer. And the Palestinians have said no, 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 no. Half a loaf is not acceptable. And that, I think, explains some of their plight. But I'll certainly acknowledge that I wish a different government existed in Israel that would have been more forthcoming to the Abbas regime. And now I'm afraid it's too late on both sides.
410-319-88. You want to say something again?
I just want to ask Ali, and then I know we have some folks who have been waiting for some time. Are you at all, I heard you say at the beginning of the show that you thought President Obama gave two great speeches.
And correct.
I'm curious at your thoughts on some of the criticism of the president in the speech he gave on Thursday, I think, of last week. He was very clear about reaching out to the Palestinian Authority and Hamas and saying that it was a reality that this was going to have to be dealt with. On Sunday, he was very clear that Israel has legitimate concerns and America stands with Israel on those concerns about a Hamas-involved government.
Well, I totally support the president in these concerns, and I agree with him. Hamas, you know, will have, although Hamas has been ostracized, they won the election fair and square.
Jimmy Carter said it was a clean election.
They should have been dealt with. Unfortunately, the West and the United States opted not to deal with them, although they were elected. I was against that. I'm still against it. I do believe if Hamas is engaged in a meaningful way, they would have to change their attitude. And they have to change their attitude. Israel is there to stay. The safety and the security of the Jewish people should be sacred to every Palestinian, to every Jew, to every Christian, to every human being. So that is not even an argument. And Hamas will have to change. And I do believe if Hamas is engaged, it may change. If it doesn't change, Hamas will have to be literally jetted off the table.
If I could just move in here for a second. I agree that Hamas was freely elected, but, you know, to a certain extent, so what? I mean, Hitler was freely elected.
So what?
No, Hitler was not freely elected.
Yes, he was. 1932, a free and fair election. And Milosevic, free and fair election. Sometimes people elect pretty unsavory characters.
And, you know,
But more to the point. Let me
we elected George
point.
Bush. I'm sorry.
More to the point, Hamas's charter still exists. And it's still the law of the land, according to Hamas. I urge you and your listeners to Google the Hamas Charter. It is a filthy document that not only calls for the destruction of Israel, but is viciously anti-Semitic. It blames the Jews for causing World War I and World War II. It provides helpful links to the Elders of Zion, the Tsarist forgery, saying the Jews are trying to take over the world. I mean, it's something out of Nazi Germany, 1937. And for the notion, if these people in Hamas want to be treated with respect, they've got to do something with their charter, just as the Palestinian Liberation Organization changed its charter and emerged as a respectable force to be dealt with.
No one
expects America to negotiate with Al-Qaeda. I don't think it's wrong for Israel to turn its back on Hamas.
I really believe there is a big difference between Hitler and other. And I don't even like it, Stephen, when people try to trivialize the Holocaust and what happened to the Jewish people by comparing Hitler and Hamas. There is no comparison. That comparison should be rejected by you before me, by the way, and before anybody else.
Let me be clear. I'm not saying Hamas is Hitler. I'm just saying that simply because a group is freely and fairly elected does not make them a reasonable negotiator.
But your simile was. I'm sorry. I'm going to move forward, in fact. We'll ignore that. I do believe, if you remember, the PLO Charter was also offensive. And as long as the world community and the Israelis did not engage the PLO Charter did not change. But once, if you recall, we engaged the PLO Charter changed.
Okay, but in terms of sequencing, the Israelis said, we are not going to talk to the PLO until they annul that part of the charter that calls for our destruction. Once the Palestinians annulled that section, then serious negotiations ensued.
But let me just ask a question on both of you. Then I do want to get Leo and Mitchell. We've been holding on. The people have left because we've been waiting too long to get on. I want you all to join us here. 410-319-8888 as we wrestle with President Barack Obama's speech about Israel and Palestine and where the future may lead. But, I mean, with all due respect, I'll play the outside push again here. I mean, Hamas won the election. Whether we like it or not, Stephen David, they won the election. And as people believe in democracy, we have to deal with who wins elections in democratically held elections in different countries, whether we like the results or not. And B, it seems to me that inside the Israeli government, you have the Liebermans and others who would just as soon see and have said the Palestinians pushed out. That they should go to Jordan. They should be forced out of the West Bank. It's all Judea and Samaria. I mean, you have, and so Israelis don't have to bomb the Palestinians. They just control the Palestinians, put people in jail, and build settlements and take people's land. And so it's a different set of things. But there, I mean, what I'm trying to say is that we always seem to look at what we consider the terrorists and the crazies on the Palestinian side that we look at as Hamas, but not on the Israeli side. I mean, and it's a different power situation that we're facing here. So, I mean, and I think that when we play these games and you're not going to negotiate with Hamas, well, if we're not going to negotiate with the Hamas, Fatah, PLO government, then we're not going to negotiate and it's never going to happen.
Well, again, that may be the outcome of the decision to unite Hamas and the Palestinian Authority. I can't see negotiations moving forward under these auspices.
Well, what would happen if Hamas was not part of it? Then the war would never end, because if Hamas isn't brought into the government, then the war will just continue.
Well, my hope would be that Hamas would be encouraged to emerge as a more moderate force, the same way the PLO emerged as the Palestinian Authority.
And again, I think engaging them, you know, there are people on the Israeli side. And, you know, it's very encouraging, by the way, what is happening. The chief Sephardic rabbi, Ovidya Yosef, am I pronouncing his name correctly, Stephen?
Mm-hmm.
His daughter, and this is the guy who said the Palestinians are a snake and the Arabs are snakes and they should all be killed. His daughter was in Ramallah 2 weeks ago talking to the Palestinian administration, to the PA and to the PLO people. And she said, when someone interviewed her, she said, I had my father's blessings to come here. Mm. You know, so there are things that are changing on the ground right now there. And I feel a lot of encouragement. I think President Obama's speech is the push that will hopefully move things forward for all of us.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Let us go to the phones as other people are calling in. Let's get them in on the air here. We'll go to Leo, Mitchell, and then Matt in that order. Leo, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Mark. And
good afternoon,
Anthony,
Leo.
Hey, Leo.
Yes, I wholeheartedly support the right of Israel to exist, but because I support the right of Israel to exist, it doesn't mean that I'm happy with the sometimes incendiary rhetoric emanating from Netanyahu. I think he's very narrow-minded in many instances, and I want to know, what was the President of the United States to say? He's simply adhering to and following the policies that have been laid out before him. The fact that he has the courage of his conviction to express the truth should be no reason for retaliation of any type or kind. Israel is a debtor nation to the extent that they receive $5 billion a year from the United States. They've blockaded the Gaza. They've cut off the water on occasion. They've cut off electricity. They've caused pain and suffering. I think you have to negotiate a settlement. If you're not willing to negotiate the settlement, there will never be a settlement. I recognize that Israel has nuclear weapons, and maybe some of the military and others in Israel feel that might makes right. Well, it should not. The fact they have nuclear weapons doesn't mean that they should be allowed to thumb their fingers, thumb their noses at the international community. So I'm gauging your reaction to those comments. I just think that violence and terrorism is in the eyes of the beholder, and there are times when the Israeli military and others have acted in a violent and terroristic way.
Now, before we can jump into responding to Leo, we have to take a short break and come right back. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Anthony McCarthy and I are here with Ali Zagab and Stephen David. 410-319-8888 is the number. We'll be right back to hear their comments on Leo's call, then go right to Mitchell and Matt, our next two callers up. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. Or you can go to steinershow.org, click on the Maryland Housing banner, and all the information on their programs are right there. In the studio with Anthony McCarthy and Mark Steiner is Dr. Ali Zagab, a Palestinian-born local businessman who used to be a professor of English literature at Birzeit University, when many years ago as an activist was shown the Allenby Bridge and sent to Jordan, and is now both back and forth a great deal and is very involved in Palestinian and Palestinian-Israeli affairs. Dr. Stephen David, professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's talk about what Leo has said. Gentlemen?
I think, Leo, you know, again, he is the equalizer. There's a lot, if you talk to people in the West Bank, they look at when the Israeli soldiers come in the middle of the night, They shoot, they kill, they break doors, they take people under 18 to jails that nobody knows anything about for 2 weeks, and at the roadblocks, this and that. Clearly, you know, terrorism is in the eye of the beholder. And terrorism should stop from all sides, and we should hopefully move towards a peaceful agreement that will be satisfactory to both the Israelis and the Palestinians.
Stephen?
Well, first of all, I don't believe that terrorism is in the eye of the beholder. I think terrorism is deliberate violence against innocents to create fear for a political purpose. When you deliberately target innocent people, knowing they're innocent, knowing they're noncombatants, that's terrorism. And whoever does it is a terrorist, and I think it's unjustifiable. Just on Gaza, I'm sure the Israelis have done a lot of things for which they should be ashamed of and for which they should be prosecuted for. But it still bothers me that the Palestinians, I think, really missed an opportunity with Gaza. Because once the Israelis left, I believe in 2005, the settlements were gone. The Palestinians had the opportunity to set up a peaceful, prosperous community living side by side with Israel. And I think this would have provided enormous pressure on Israel to then give up the West Bank as well. Because if the Gaza Palestinians showed, hey, your settlements left, your troops left, and look, nothing bad happened, same thing should happen in the West Bank.
Yeah, instead, but the way...
what they did is launched thousands and thousands of rockets against Israeli civilians. And this makes it harder then to make the next step of leaving the West Bank, something that I very much hope the Israelis do. But I think it was a wrong move. I think it was a stupid move. It was a counterproductive move. And I think everyone is still paying the price.
I totally agree with you on one hand that it is a stupid move to launch rockets against even military people in my book. I don't want rockets anywhere. But the rockets are from both sides, by the way. And Gaza was not given to the Palestinians in an orderly manner, you know. Had the Israelis sat down and negotiated, this is what we need you to do, this is what we're going to give you Gaza back. We are not going to enclose Gaza. The sea should be open. If this is an independent little entity, they should be able to go into the Mediterranean and come back into the Mediterranean. And if they have flotilla ships helping them, you know, bringing food and cement and spaghetti and things of that nature, Israel should not block these things. There's a big difference between giving them a free Gaza and just fleeing Gaza in a very disorderly manner and leaving it.
I mean, Ali, what do you think would happen if rockets started being launched against cities in Texas or in California from Mexico?
Well, I think, you know, if Texas is under occupation, you know, like the West Bank and Gaza, Gaza is still under occupation. When you surround Gaza and you don't allow people to come in and out of that little enclave, that is occupation, sea occupation, air occupation. There was an airport that the Israelis demolished before they left.
Well, again, maybe if the government of Gaza didn't dedicate itself to the eradication of Israel, to say nothing of the Jewish people, they would be more forthcoming in releasing some of the blockade against Gaza. I would hope they would do more of that.
We have a lot of callers calling in. Let me get to some of our listeners here. 410-319-8888. Mitchell, you're on the air.
Mitchell?
Mitchell, you're on the air. I know Mitchell's there. He wouldn't
can hear him breathing.
Yes, I'm talking.
Go ahead, Mitchell. You're on the air. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Mark, I've asked you to do a show about the Jews in Germany before World War One, during World One, and after World War One, because during World War One, the Jews in Germany, they supported Germany during that war. And one of the proofs of that support of them during that war was that by the time Hitler came to power, the Jews in Germany were the most assimilated Jews in the history of the world. The French were more anti-Semitic, and most of Europe was more anti-Semitic, and even the United States was more anti-Semitic than the Germans were. And I say that to say that if the Germans hadn't turned on the Jews during World War II, the Jews would have supported Germany also. So the point I'm making is that they felt betrayed by the German people because they were the most assimilated Jews in the history of the world. So this is history is important to me because it makes you understand who the Jews are in Israel. These are people who feel betrayed. There's such a high level of paranoia. The psychology of that is so immense. How can you negotiate with people like that? How can you have an agreement with people who felt betrayed? And this level of paranoia is so intense and so high that nobody can understand that but other Jews.
Let's talk about what Mitchell said. I mean, I know Mitchell, and Stephen, I'll let you go first. I mean, I think that what I mean, there's that we are where we are in the world today. But I think you might even agree that if we hadn't had the Holocaust, if we hadn't had the disaster that happened to European Jewry, you know, I cannot. And if the Jews did not live under such harsh anti-Semitism, I can remember my grandfather who grew up in Poland. When I asked him one day, "Why do you hate Polish people so much?" And my grandfather, and I won't use his accent, said to me back, "What I should like the Poles, they've done something good for me." Mm. Because they, you know, they, my grandmother who saw her was holding her little sister's hand in the shtetl of Poltusk outside of Warsaw. The Cossacks came in and lopped off her sister's head as she was holding her hand when my bubby was 6 years old. So, I mean, the Jews, so what, that's part of what Mitchell's saying. So
I don't really know. I don't really think, you know, you know, you can't forget Kristallnacht and things of that nature in Germany.
No, I don't. That's not saying forget that.
And tell me that, you know, the Jews were very assimilated in Germany. I don't know.
But I don't, well, tell me what you think that has to do with today's discussion, Stephen David.
Well, first of all, I think Henry Kissinger once said, you know, even paranoids have real enemies. And the Jews may be paranoid, but heck, Jews have a lot of real enemies. And if you're sitting in Israel, you don't have... I mean, paranoia is a delusion of persecution, but a lot of it isn't delusionary. I mean, Ahmadinejad in Iran famously said he wants to wipe Israel off the map. Hamas, as charter, wants to extinguish and destroy Israel as a Jewish state. Israel has fought many wars with its neighbors. So, yes, I mean, maybe some of this is a kind of Holocaust mentality and seeing the Palestinians as Nazis, which they most assuredly are not. But some of it is genuine security concerns. I mean, Israel is a tiny country. And, you know, we talk about the 1967 borders. It is only 8 or 9 miles wide at its narrowest. And there are legitimate security concerns that Israel has. And I think it's mistaken to simply say, well, this has to do with, all has to do with Jewish history and paranoia.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. I mean, both of you, then I want to go to Matt, our next caller. There's a lot of people calling in, so I want to kind of a quick response to this, a thought about this. When you look at the fact that 20% of what we call Palestine
22. Historic Palestine
is now Jewish, Israeli.
No, 78%, I'm sorry, of historic Palestine is Jewish, is Israel.
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying, what we now call Palestine, the West Bank and Gaza, 20% of the population is Israeli and Jewish.
Oh, the population.
When you look in the Israeli population, 20% of the Israeli population is Palestinian.
A little bit more, I think.
Is Palestinian or Palestinian.
Muslim.
and Christian Palestinians.
Correct, yeah.
You saw what happened when the anniversary of the Israeli liberation or the Nakba, whichever way you look at it, that happened, and Palestinians came to the border and went over the border. And we've seen what's going on now in Arab nations around the world where people are pushing for democracy and we don't know where all this is going to end up. So I'm saying all that to say we're in a very different situation than we were even last year, let alone 20 years ago,
wow,
let alone 40 years ago. So I'm not sure, and we're still arguing, I think, some of the same things we have been arguing, Stephen David and Ali Zagheb.
Yeah.
And I think we've had a shift, and the same responses will no longer work.
Well, again, I think it is even more imperative for Israel to support the creation of a Palestinian state. I mean, look, Israel has sort of three things going for it. It's a democracy, it's a Jewish state, and it holds on to the occupied territories. Mm-hmm. It can have any two of those things. It could be Jewish and a democracy. It could be Jewish and an occupied and hold on to the lands, whichever combinations you want, but it can hold on to all three. And those of us who want Israel to be Jewish and democratic fervently hope that a Palestinian state that would live in peace will emerge in the West Bank and Gaza. And all of this tumult in the Arab world, to me, just makes that kind of outcome all the more important and all the more in Israel's interest.
I totally agree with you.
I get so upset with Hamas, and Hamas and now the Palestinian Authority are together. I think that's an obstacle to peace, just as I feel the settlements are an obstacle to peace. And I think that's bad for the Arabs, and it's bad for the Jews.
I'm glad you mentioned the settlements, because Netanyahu just approved something like 200 new housing units in Itamar, you know. And Hamas is intransigent. Hamas, I wish, you know, and I hope they will change their charter. But, you know, you have the foreign minister of Israel, Lieberman, you know, who is one of the most incendiary, quote-unquote, leaders I have seen in the past 20 years, to be honest with you. So it is not the radicalism is not just from one side.
And I agree, but Lieberman does not speak for Netanyahu. In fact, Netanyahu has disavowed some of what Lieberman said.
Well, he's the foreign minister, then, you know, sack him.
I know he's the foreign minister, and he's an embarrassment. But if what he says becomes the policies of Israel, if the Israelis launched into, I don't know, forced expulsion of Arabs and such, then I think you're dealing with a different situation.
410-319-8888. Matt, you're on the air. Hi, Matt. You're on the air.
Yes, how y'all doing?
Hey, Matt.
Well, welcome.
Good. I want to address something, and, you know, I hope I can speak and you know, not be cut short, but the Palestinian-Israeli state is never going to be peace, because getting to the heart of the matter, the Palestinians are not the rightful rulers of that plan, I mean, of that turf, and neither are the Israelis. The Israelis go back to people who converted a long time ago, and they have been basically carrying the Jews' ways for so long that people have believed that they are Jewish. Now, when the Balfour Agreement happened, that was to set in motion something that's about to manifest in a few short years. People forget, and they're not scripturally inclined. Okay, if we are saying we are Jewish, we're supposed to be reading the scriptures, and the scriptures should tell us what it has to say about this. And the book of Joel talks about how they divided my land and sold a boy for a harlot. The true Israelites, not Israelis, but the true Israelites are the descendants of slavery. They still in America.
Okay, Matt, this is taking the conversation to a place that we really don't want to take it, I think. But I appreciate your thoughts.
But I'm saying, it matters
right
in the conversation.
But I think
not the modern conversation, maybe 3,000 years ago, possibly, but not now.
So let's go to Kathy in Towson.
How are you?
Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Kathy. You're on the air.
Great conversation. I'll be quick. My concern is that Israel and the Palestinians now have to come to a decision before world circumstances take the decision away from them, especially the economic situation. You know, after a while, when people have a lot of problems, they're going to forget about Israel, they're going to forget about the Palestinians, and heaven only knows what's going to happen.
Mm.
So I would hope that they, you know, would kind of wake up and just say, okay, we're going to solve this on our own, and not have outside sources tell them what it's going to do.
Kathy?
I hope so. You know, Mark, it's listening
Thank
to
you,
her,
Kathy.
It reminds me, in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, I'm fairly young, I interned in the Washington office of the Palestinian Liberation Organization, and Dr. Ashwari was the representative.
Hanan Ashrawi.
Oh, my gosh. And I must tell you, I learned so much seeing her every day, watching her smoke and drink her strong coffee. But she lectured me, because she thought I had a real American way of thinking, but I wasn't American. But, you know, I've been involved in politics here in the city, and Art Abramson and a whole lot of Jewish leaders have really taught me a lot. But it's interesting to me, and I want to ask Dr. David and Ali as we get ready to wrap up, I guess.
Stephen, my mother calls me Dr. David.
Oh, okay. You earned that, doctor. I wanted to.
Well, but, doctors,
that's right, doctor. are there things being said in private that are more progressive than either side say in public? It seems like we're entrenched, and it just dawned on me, I'm 40-ish. This debate has been going on long before I was born, and it's still going on. It doesn't look like, I mean, as much as we keep saying nice things, what's the prospect of really resolving this?
I would say the prospect right now looks very gloomy. Maybe it always, you know, darkest before the dawn kind of thing, but You've got a right-wing government in Israel that is committed to settlement building, that I don't think is committed to finding a peace settlement. And on the other side, you now have Hamas aligned with the Palestinian Authority. And the Israelis, again, I think understandably don't want to negotiate with a group that calls for its destruction. So right now, I wouldn't put a lot of money into peace futures in the Middle East.
I'm a little bit more optimistic than you are. I do believe that the Palestinians and the Israelis will never create peace between themselves unless there is a power from the outside. That power from the outside would be, right now, the U.S., the European Union, and the Quartet. Mm. They all have to work hand in hand to assure the Israelis of their safety and security, which are paramount to every single Israeli I ever talked to in the past 30, 40 years. And they have to assure the Palestinians that they have to have dignity, they have to have a state. And I do believe that President Obama is starting on the right foot. And I really am hopeful that there will be some major changes, and it's both in the interest of the Israelis and absolutely the interest of the Palestinians to move this forward. Because what is happening in the Middle East and the Arab countries may not bode well for the Israelis, to be honest with you. I think it's about time they wake up and move forward with the peace process.
410-319-8888. Chris in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi, Chris.
I'll try and keep it as short as possible. Each one of you have touched on the point, or rather the question I wanted to raise. As a layman, as a truck-driving American citizen who was a former Marine, I don't feel like, as much as I've listened to this argument from New York, I've heard this for a long time, and as Anthony just said, this has gone on for a long time. Each side is entrenched. I feel like the third party that could be brought into the conversation is the American people. This is where the tax dollars come from to support any side in question. And yet, every political cycle, this is one major issue that is never laid out to the people. Not so much what side to take or anything, just what exactly is at stake first and foremost. What is the basis for the conflict? It's like the people, I feel like I don't know enough about this situation. I've tried to do my own personal research and you know how far it goes back even before the six-day war, whatever the case was, and the trails. And I just try to do my own research, but the case hasn't been laid out, to the American people at all. We know about the lobbies and who represents who, and we know that we're a staunch ally of Israel, and I'm not saying that we should or should not be. But why are we? What is the Palestinian position? What is the actual position? I don't think the case is laid out to the people enough. We hear the argument from the outside, almost like looking in the window of a married couple. But no one talks to us, and I feel like that may be a big part that's left out.
Hmm. Wow. Very interesting points. We only have about 4 minutes left, so I'd like to hear both your thoughts on that. It's Stephen and then Ali.
Well, I mean, you raise an important point. Look, it's a very complicated situation that goes back thousands of years. I mean, in its modern manifestation, it's at least a 100-year conflict. And I think it is important for people to study and look at the history and the two narratives of both sides. But at the end of the day, I think what you will find is that there's a lot of right and a lot of wrong on both sides. I mean, the Palestinians have a claim to Palestine through history, through the rights of a settled population, for the desire to have their own country. The Jews have a right to Palestine through also religion, ancient history, international law, centuries, millennia of persecution. I mean, both sides have very strong claims to the same piece of land. And I think once that's acknowledged, the next question is, okay, how can we divide this land for two peoples? And then you get into almost more tactical situations. And the ironic thing is, I think most reasonable people, and I suspect Ali and I would fall in that category, know where this should end. We know what a settlement would look like. It would look a lot like the Taba Camp David Accords with the Palestinian state in the West Bank and Gaza, Jerusalem as its capital, East Jerusalem as its capital, and some land swaps along the 67 border. So we know where it's going. So the real question then is, how do we get there?
Ali.
I really think that's why President Obama should be highly commended for his speech, because he laid it out for everybody, especially for the Palestinians and the Israelis. This is where we should go. This is the basic issue that we have to start tackling. And I think he put it beautifully. And I do believe that is where we're heading.
Dr. Aliza Geb, Dr. Stephen David, thank you both so much for being with us. It's a pleasure to have you here with us. It's been a very good conversation. Thank you both for taking your time. Anthony McCarthy?
Always great to be with you, Mark. I enjoy our Mondays. Unfortunately, as you and I have been talking, this will be my last Monday for a very long time with you. That I have decided to get involved in some partisan politics here in the city that will take me away from the radio station on an extended leave of absence. I care very much for the city. I care very much who leads the city, and I want to be involved. And so I'll talk about it more. I wish we had more time, but I'll talk about it more this Friday on my program. But I look forward to my Mondays with you.
So after the election, if you don't go into city government, that's right. Or if your candidate should not make it,
that's right.
I hope that back in the air with us.
I enjoy our energy together.
I do. Good luck, Anthony McCarthy.
Thank you, brother.
It's always great to have you here.
Thank you all for
calling in, listening in today. It's been a great couple of hours, so I appreciate all of you participating in this show. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Cricket Arison and Justin Levy. We're engineered by Akisa Gunn. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. Our intern today is Justin Mayhew. To hear the show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, and information about our guests and their work, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.